It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today joining us with their political analysis, Karen Kodrowski is director of the Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State University in Ames. Karen, welcome back to the program.
Hello, thank you.
Got a few hours of sleep, Karen, with us until about midnight in our live caucus coverage. Dennis Goldford, thank you for joining us, professor of politics at Drake University, joining us today by telephone. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Ben.
Want to reach out? Yes. What can we do but laugh at this point or cry? This hour, we want to hear your caucus stories, caucus goers from last night. Did you caucus? Share your experience this hour. Were you happy with the way things ran in your precinct? Was your candidate viable in the first alignment? If not, did you move to your second choice candidate? Was that successful? What are your thoughts on this delay? We're to hear later today. We heard the top of the hour news dominating the NPR news. 4 p.m. today, at least 50% of the results promised by the Iowa Democratic Party. 1-866-780-9100. Only phones today. For the purposes of this hour to join us, 1-866-780-9100, wanting to hear your caucus experience, your thoughts on this delay. Let me start off before comment from Dennis and Karen by pulling some words. You've heard them from the coverage from around the country, around the world, a debacle, fiasco, total meltdown, disaster, perhaps the most creative. The BBC, I heard just past midnight when I walked out of the studio after our team's 5 hours of live caucus coverage from the BBC. This is a quote: "In Iowa, technology has thrown a sparrow into the works." last night, the release of Iowa caucus results delayed after inconsistencies in reporting of the data. This is not a hack or intrusion, according to the state Democratic Party. Party using photos of results, paper trail to validate the results. Of course, that necessarily takes longer than the original plan. Around 1 a.m. last night, the chairman of the Iowa Democratic Party, Troy Price, held a press conference with reporters explaining why the results have been delayed.
"We're validating every piece of data we have against our paper trail. That system is taking longer than expected, but it's in place to ensure we are eventually able to report results with full confidence.
We want to emphasize that this is a reporting issue, not a hack or an intrusion. And it's exactly why we have a paper trail and systems in place to uphold the integrity of our process."
Troy Price at 1 a.m. last night, just within the last hour, the Iowa Democratic Party says, in fact, Troy Price will be announcing this at 4 p.m. Central Time, at least 50% of the caucus results have been promised to us. Dennis Goldford, let me start out with you. What is your understanding of what happened?
Well, before I answer that, let me just mention a couple of more clever headlines.
Okay.
One is, "Congratulations, America, we broke Iowa." And the other one is from the New Yorker, the Borowitz Report, which is always satire. Mm. And the headline is, "Florida offers to help Iowa count votes."
Oh, no.
Yeah, pretty grim, pretty grim. You know, I have no tech capacity of my own. I am not a computer person. But I remember years ago tech friends telling me their motto was, "To err is human, but to really screw things up, you need a computer."
Mm.
You know, you had a situation in which you have very well-intended, highly motivated people trying to do a good, honest job in a very complex process. And as far as we can tell, the caucuses themselves went off as they're supposed to. The problem was simply reporting. I've gotten wisps of conspiracy-minded rumors, which I think is simply preposterous. You just had well-intentioned people hitting a set of procedures that were overloaded or they just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, I think that sort of headline, "Congratulations, America, we broke Iowa," that really is a substantial debacle. That substantial egg on the face of Iowa and the position of the caucuses in the nominating process.
Right. And Pete Buttigieg, perhaps not meaning to say so, but one of his quotes I see taken into the press last night, "Iowa, you have shocked the nation."
Mm-hmm.
Karen Kodrowski, what do you make of the caucus chaos?
Well, I actually love all of these adjectives, and I think that together they pretty adequately describe what's going on. Like Dennis, I'm not a techie type, but I don't either ascribe to any of the conspiracy theory series that are swirling around. I actually saw a headline on Fox News that connected Hillary Clinton to the people who programmed the app as if somehow she was responsible for the what happened last night.
Mm.
I also think that this points to the weakness of the Democratic Party in Iowa and probably political parties in the United States in general. So you have a relatively small, underfunded party in a relatively small state. They have to raise all of their own money, and they have to purchase the expertise and train lots of volunteers in what is a fairly complex process. And I really think that, probably just as a financial decision, they did not pay for adequate testing of this app. And if the news reports are to believe, they did not actually train the precinct captains on how to download and use the app. So they didn't have any opportunity to test it on the volume of data that they would be receiving in a relatively short amount of time, mm-hmm. and then to see if there were going to be problems with downloading that data. And that was probably, a decision that was made based upon, both financial concerns and with, a benign intent, right? Not anticipating that something of this magnitude would happen. I think it really does call into question, though, further call into question, whether or not Iowa can retain its first in the nation status.
Okay.
The eyes of the world are on Iowa, and this is absolutely humiliating.
You have the collision, I think, of 21st century technology with what are essentially 19th century procedures. The caucuses just weren't built to support the weight that's put on them politically, and then you add in the technology aspect with the need, as Karen said, the need for all these volunteers, best intended people in the world, to work a fairly set of complex steps in order to finish the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to our phones. Dennis Goldford with us, professor of politics at Drake University. Karen Kodrowski of Iowa State University, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Chris in Cedar Rapids. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to talk to you all.
I see on my screen, Chris, you are were a precinct captain at a caucus location where?
Yeah, that was in Cedar Rapids. I was a precinct captain with the Elizabeth Warren campaign last night. And just to kind of talk about kind of what I noticed about the reporting issue,
mm-hmm.
The caucus went off pretty smoothly overall. There was no real problems or issues with the counting or the ballots, the paperwork, any of that. But then at the end of the night, when it came time for the district chair to report the results via the app, we were kind of standing around waiting to get the paperwork submitted to our campaigns, the precinct captains from the viable from the viable candidates. And it seemed like they were having a problem reallocating from the second alignment. One of the candidates, Andrew Yang, was not viable. And he had 9 voters in the precinct, but the app was not allowing them to reapportion them to other candidates, and it wasn't allowing them to edit it. So it was treating a non-viable candidate like they were viable, and that was kind of halting the process of reporting for them. I mean, at the time, I didn't realize it would be a systematic thing, obviously, but I think that might have been at least one of the problems with the app that was going on.
Right, Chris. And as a precinct captain at that location for Elizabeth Warren here, frustration not only from the Warren camp, but from all the campaigns, I imagine. Chris, did that filter down to you as a precinct captain at that Cedar Rapids location?
It didn't really dawn on me too much. The Elizabeth Warren campaign had an independent app already set up that had online and offline capabilities along with a backup hotline that I called just to verify that everything went through okay. So I didn't have any problem reporting any of the information to the campaign that I saw. I didn't really realize until after I had left, because everything was pretty much shut down, that there was any kind of problem with the reporting. So everything seemed okay on my end until I kind of woke up this morning and there were still no results.
Okay. Chris, thank you very much. Of course, 50% of those results expected by at around 4 p.m. this afternoon, as announced by the Iowa Democratic Party. Chris in Cedar Rapids, thank you very much. Let's go to another caller. Let's go to David. David in Ames. David, you caucused in Ames?
Yes, actually, I was one of the precinct chairs in Ames. I was a precinct chair for a precinct that we had nearly 300 people, a pretty good mixture of both students and community residents.
Okay, so you're not connected with any campaign. You were a precinct chair to make sure the process went well.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't, I don't think, I guess I'm not 100% certain. I think the precinct chairs, the volunteers, we were able to caucus, but I was not in any capacity like caucusing for anyone in a visible way. I was running the event.
David, how in terms of this delay, when did you notice or did you notice in the course of the evening that things were going awry?
Well, not until after, because you know the caucus itself went. You know, I was in that same precinct 4 years ago, and it was an incredible mess. But they were able to. They did a lot of really positive things to make it run more smoothly this year. And I really thought the app was going to add to that. There were a few weird bugs and quirks with the app, as far as, you know, you could tell it was something that was new and something they need to get used to and go through some revisions at some point. But I didn't notice anything awry within our room. I thought there was, after we left, everyone that I spoke to, the precinct captains, you know, there were a few that were disappointed with the results of their candidate, but everyone seemed very pleased with the process itself. Mm-hmm. And we left the room, I think, feeling as a whole pretty positive that every voice was heard and was counted.
Well,
and then as I started turning on the news, I felt that's when I noticed that things were awry.
David in Ames, thank you very much for your view from that caucus in Ames. Let's take one more caller at this time. Nathan from Western Iowa. Where about in Western Iowa, Nathan?
Well, I'm just driving. I'm on my cell phone, but I was in Bondurant last night, and our precinct went great, just like Chris and the gentleman in Ames both said. You know, it was a really smooth event, and everyone, you know, all the volunteers from all the different campaigns, they all, you know, I think more Iowans just care about this going right than our particular candidate winning, you know, so everyone seemed to be a good team and really positive. And it seems like, you know, once I got home, turned on the news, and it just seems that the state party was totally out of their depth last night. Not just, as Chris mentioned, the app not working, but just how secretive and, you know, it seemed kind of evasive the state party was toward the media, toward the campaigns, toward the Iowans and Iowa Democrats, you know, who pay dues to the state party. Just how little the state party seemed to be doing to manage this situation, or just how totally unprepared they seemed.
Nathan.
And this is after 4 years of waiting and millions of dollars invested in this process. I really think volunteers and the activists and the campaigns did a splendid job, as they always do. And the state party has just fallen flat on their face after having 4 years to get this right.
Nathan, thank you very much for your view from Western Iowa. And so Karen, let me turn back to you. So we see at a certain level, many of the caucuses, I mean, people go to caucuses expecting some degree of controlled chaos, if I can put it that way. If you've ever participated in a chaos, that's perhaps a good descriptor for it. So it wasn't at the basic level. It was what, in the communication level, once the results were tallied, the process had been gone through. Depending on the size of the caucus, that could have taken a half an hour, an hour, or a couple of hours if you had a larger caucus site, Karen.
Well, I'm glad to hear that the callers have reported that their caucuses went smoothly. The caucus that I attended had a few hiccups, you know, with some confusion about which of the pledge cards to hand out, and then when the first alignment was over and when it wasn't over. So there, you know, there were some things that were just not as clearly communicated in the moment as they could have been to move smoothly. But having said that, I don't think there was any errors in calculation that ultimately came from those little hiccups.
Right.
I think that my colleagues here in the Greenlee School of Communication are going to be able to use the Iowa Democratic Party's response as a case study in really lousy crisis communication.
Okay, expand on that, because our caller mentioned that.
Sure.
What is lousy about what happened? We experienced
Well,
it.
I mean, first of all, you know, the entire experience is lousy, but one of the basic rules of crisis communication is to get out in front of the story, to provide as much information as you possibly can, as quickly as you possibly can, and then provide, you know, some sort of a plan for moving forward. So, you know, if you find somebody is, you know, I don't know, you know, one of your employees has posted anti-Semitic tropes on social media, you want to be the one who announces that that happened, and then to the degree that you are able to talk about what the consequences were. So the moment that they knew they had a problem, which was clearly before 1 a.m. or when the Chesty conference calls happened with the candidates, or when they were hanging up on people and all of the other things, is that they should have come out and said, there is an issue and we are being as careful as we can, and this is what we can tell you about what we know. Instead, it was, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. And in the meantime, the international news media, not just the locals, not just CNN, but international news media are vamping for hours on end, you know, and then you end up, you know, just going in these spirals of conjecture and speculation. And, you know, what they needed was some way of being able to provide some news to the public.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, are you completely on board with that poor grade that Karen just delivered?
Oh, sure. Although I think I would add that, interestingly, if you talk about crisis management and crisis communication, I think that's in effect what the actual candidates did, because essentially, certainly Buttigieg and Warren and Klobuchar and Sanders essentially gave victory speeches.
Yes, they did.
In other words, they got out, they wanted to get out ahead of the results, whatever they might turn out to be, to try to help shape that narrative. Biden's speech was more the sense, I mean, there was a headline in The Hill, the Washington, D.C. political newsletter, about how, you know, this is the beginning of a long process, we will soldier on. And this, of course, is before official results came out, as they still are not out yet. To me, if a politician in an election issues a statement like that, you know, that's asking your doctor after your physical, how did I do? And the doctor says, don't buy any long-term bonds. I think that that showed clearly that they knew they had problems. Mm-hmm. And even the expression on Joe Biden's face, other than the forced smiles, you could tell they knew they were in trouble.
Right. Let's go to a little audio from last night. This is a little section from Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, who had a late surge in the days coming up to the caucus. From what we can tell, had a good night anecdotally in our evening coverage yesterday, talking with precincts where Amy Klobuchar certainly reached viability. Here she is addressing a crowd of supporters at her caucus watch party, alluding that her campaign performed better than expected. This is without any official results late last night. And as you both mentioned, each party, each campaign spinning it as they like, because there were no official results and still aren't.
Join us, because we are going to be here, it looks like, a really long time tonight. And you will have plenty of time to join us at amyklobuchar.com. So let's stay up. Let's stay in a good spirit, because you all know what happened out there in those precincts. You know that we have been punching way beyond our weight. You know that despite some limited resources compared to some of those bigger bank accounts, we are way on the board. So let's stay up. Let's stay up. Let's stay happy. And let's head to New Hampshire. Thank you, Iowa. I love you.
Okay, Amy Klobuchar, they're referencing New Hampshire, which is 1 week from today on the 11th of February. So Karen Kodrowski, comment on Amy Klobuchar specifically as we kind of put that delay in the results reporting to the side, how each candidate dealt with it. Interesting there. But Amy Klobuchar, from what we can tell, not a first place, not a second. From what we can tell, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong, but certainly doing better than expected.
Yeah, I think she did. And I think we got a sense of that in the late polls that were released right before the Iowa caucus. And she was viable in my precinct as well, and did as well as Sanders. Essentially, they were tied in my precinct, which, you know, I think was a bit of a surprise, actually. Having said that, you know, Klobuchar, if she is what we suspect, the one who beat expectations, and it, you know, is a, and I'm using air quotes here, a winner by beating expectations, even if she didn't come in first in either of the alignments or delegate allocation or anything like that, she's the one who should be benefiting most from the momentum coming out of Iowa. It's always the sort of surprise winner. And she may not get that bounce with the delay in the results. And I always fear that when there's a question about the results or a problem with the results, that whoever is the winner, whether that is being the first past the post in one of the, you know, quantitative measures, or if it's this qualitative, just better than expected thing, that there's always sort of an asterisk that it was a contested year.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, before we go to break, less of a springboard effect because of this delay, even if it comes out this afternoon at 4 o'clock. You have written over decades and written books about the Iowa caucuses, so you know about this effect Iowa can have on the states that follow.
Sure. Last night, for a certain number of hours at least, the attention of the world was focused on Iowa. And normally we disappear off the face of the earth the morning afterwards. But last night, the candidates, those who had exceeded expectations or at least met them, would have had the attention of certainly the country, but also the world. Now it's all muddied by the complications of the process, and also by having to talk about this in terms of already being in New Hampshire.
Okay, Dennis Goldford, stay with us. Professor of Politics at Drake University in Des Moines. Karen Kodrowski, Director of the Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State University, inviting our callers to share your caucus experiences last night. Was it smooth? Did you get the candidate you wanted? We'll come back with more analysis. Also talk with a preview of the State of the Union address by the president tonight. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Caucus chaos on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Dennis Goldford of Drake University, Karen Kodrowski of Iowa State University. We're picking apart, we thought we'd be reporting and analyzing a completely different story. Who won? Who lost? We don't know that yet, really. We have some sort of anecdotal indications of it, declarations by the various campaigns, but we are being promised at least 50% of the results by around 4 p.m. this afternoon. And so the story has become what has been named from reports from around the country, around the world, a debacle, a fiasco, total meltdown, a disaster, and colorfully from our journalistic colleagues across the pond at the BBC, a sparrow thrown into the works. And let's continue in a minute to get your experiences if you went to the Iowa caucuses. Did it run smoothly? Did that work for the candidate you showed up for? Or perhaps you had to go after the first alignment to a second choice candidate. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Well, this bit of audio, interesting, and I don't think this is unusual. It has happened in past caucuses. Dennis can tell us that, whether that has happened. Last night at the Des Moines Precinct 13, Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren had an equal number of supporters, 38 apiece. So how did they resolve this tie for the final delegate? With, of course, a coin toss. Here's the precinct co-chair, Mike DeFeo.
So, before we move forward, we have to break a tie between Warren and Buttigieg. So we're gonna flip a coin. Warren and Buttigieg are tied, and in order to break that tie, we have to flip a coin.
I got a coin.
So this is for a second delegate. You're gonna call. I'm gonna flip.
Okay.
All right. Jeez, this is unbelievable. Ready?
Yep. Tails.
You got. It is tails. So Pete Buttigieg wins the coin flip and the second delegate. We're going to name the delegates in just a second.
Okay, Pete Buttigieg winning that coin toss. Dennis Goldford, I know of at least one other coin toss reported during our live coverage last night. This happens actually quite a bit, right? A tie will happen.
Well, this makes everybody nervous. I had several questions about this from foreign journalists, in fact, yesterday. But, you know, you can't have half delegates, and you've got to figure out some way of dealing with it. And then what are you going to do in case of a tie? So everybody thought this is the fairest way to do it. And, of course, I think wasn't the concern in 2016 that there were a half a dozen coin tosses and Hillary Clinton won all of them, and supposedly that's statistically not probable.
Yeah.
Although I think there was the first coin toss I heard of last night had not Bernie, but whoever it was winning, and I thought Bernie just can't get a break with coin tosses. So it's hard to say. But, again, you know, you have a private organization, not the official state election machinery, doing this event, which itself is not in and of itself, strictly speaking, an election in the ordinary way we would understand that. So there are a lot of policies that may be formalized, but there are a lot of ad hoc decisions people have to make. You do the best you can. The question, again, is, as I've always asked, were the caucuses built to bear the weight that the rest of the country and west of the world put on them? And what we saw last night, whether it's coin tosses last night or 4 years ago, or even with the difficulties last night, is the indication, at least to some extent, that it's a very fragile, if not rickety, machine for doing all of this.
Mm-hmm. Part of a statement I'll read from the Iowa Secretary of State, Paul Pate, reminding Iowans and others that the Iowa Secretary of State's office and county auditors have no official role in the Iowa caucuses. Later
don't
on,
blame
in this,
us.
Right. This is a party function here, a party event. He concludes his remarks there, emailed this morning. I support the Iowa Democratic Party while they take their time and conduct checks and balances to ensure the accuracy and integrity of the votes. Let's go back to our callers, asking for callers this hour with firsthand experience going to caucuses last night. Terry is with us from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Terry. Where were you when you caucused?
I was at the Shores Event Center. I'm not sure my district number.
Okay.
My experience there last night, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just what was your experience? Go ahead.
Yes. My experience last night was a little surprising. I've caucused. This was my fourth or fifth time going to caucus, and I just had a feeling with the rule changes it was going to get a little chaotic. At my precinct, they handed out the vote cards, and they were counting them as they were handing them out, and they had numbers on them. One person from the Bernie Sanders group got up, told people he was going to the bathroom. They got an extra card for him, and then it turned out that guy left. They had to turn that card back in. While everyone was going for the first alignment, some candidates' supporters realized that they weren't going to be viable. They already had their cards filled in with the first choice. They switched, and they did a vote count based on people raising their hands. So people were raising their hands for somebody that they didn't write down. They said... But they went through the whole thing and counted everyone before they realized that happened. Everybody's cheering. People start leaving, and they realize that this happened. So people already had their vote cards turned in. They left, and then there was people filling their new unspoiled vote cards out for the first time.
Wow.
And then they added them to tally to that. I was standing next to one of the people that was meant to have access to that app, and he was complaining before anything even started that he wasn't able to log into it. He couldn't even get into it before it even started.
Okay, Terry in Cedar Rapids, thank you for relaying some of the details of what I can see for you was a very negative experience. Karen Kodrowski, you were at a caucus site last night. So what are your thoughts when you hear Terry's description?
I find it absolutely plausible. What happened in my caucus in particular is the vote cards were numbered, but the precinct captain and the secretary didn't mention this to the caucus attendees. So one group of caucus goers were waiting and waiting to get the cards to write down who it was that they supported, and nobody was coming over to take care of them. So they saw another pile of them and simply grabbed them and started filling them out. Well, it turned out that the group that they had grabbed were numbers in excess of the number of people at the caucus. Mm. So all of those had to be turned back in. Then they had to go around and find blank cards that had been distributed to the other candidates' caucuses and get them over to this group. And it probably delayed everything for about 45 minutes. I think what should have happened is the part that worked really well was that when we got our name tags, each name tag had a number on it and they were handed out sequentially. So you knew, the minute that registration was done, how many caucus attendees there were. We should have received the corresponding card at that time and just have been instructed or had it placed in an envelope or something where we did not open it or fill it out until after the alignment was done. Mm-hmm. However, I can totally understand Terry's concern that people would just start writing things down because without information and instructions, people are just going to do what they're going to do.
Right. And then if they're working for a candidate, they're going to, some minds will try to figure out a way to game it for their candidate. Dennis Goldford, when you hear what has happened, we had a series of changes with the preference cards, for instance, to this year's caucuses. Quickly, before we quickly go back to the phones, the hour is getting away from us. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think when you hear events like these, like those the caller and Karen mentioned, for the people for whom these various events have real-world consequences, their argument will be this simply is unacceptable. And that would be their frustration and their anger.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to another caucus goer, Christy, calling from Iowa City. Christy, please be concise. Thank you for calling in. What was your experience?
Hi, I was in Iowa City at one of the precinct locations. We had over 850 people there. I was just a participant. I wasn't involved in the leadership, but I think they did a wonderful job. They answered everyone's questions. They had a microphone. They made sure that everyone understood the process. We got the cards when we got in. And as a native Iowan, I'm a little disturbed by all the piling on. This is the first national election, so to speak, that international eyes were looking at. And what we were told is our elections are under scrutiny and things like that. So I think Iowans are doing a good job, like everyone's saying, being accurate. We'd rather be right than be fast. And I know that all of these precautions were put in to make sure that they kept the integrity of the vote. So I was very pleased with how it went down. I'm very proud of us.
Christy, thank you very much for your positive view from Iowa City. Elsie is with us from Des Moines. Please be concise. We're coming up to the end of the hour. Elsie, you're on the air. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. I am very glad I got to talk because I had a very good experience at one of the satellite locations because I use a walker, and so it was accessible, and they were very, very good to do everything to help make this a wonderful experience for me. And I just wanted to say, when you have something new, and we need to have something new, I think we have an opportunity to do it again and better. And I just want to say also, this is Elsie, and I am disabled and satellite location work for me.
Elsie,
do you have any questions for me?
That's it. We're running out of time. Elsie, you've given us a great picture, and we're so glad you're very satisfied about your caucus experience. Elsie in Des Moines, thank you for calling. All right, let's reserve a few minutes to look ahead here. Of course, so many aspects we could spend all afternoon talking about with the caucuses. At 4 p.m. this afternoon, we're expecting to hear from the Iowa Democratic Party at least 50% of the results from yesterday's caucuses. Tomorrow, in other politics, the Republican-led Senate almost certain to end the impeachment drive against Donald Trump with a vote to acquit him over charges of abuse of power, obstruction of justice, over his efforts to pressure Ukraine to investigate his Democratic opponents tonight at 8 p.m. Central Time, and we'll have coverage for it on all of our stations here at Iowa Public Radio. President Trump will face his Democratic accusers giving his State of the Union speech. He's expected to push his case for another 4 years in office. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told the New York Times tonight they would treat him, quote, as a guest, and we hope he will behave as a guest. Karen Kudrowski, what will you be listening for tonight?
Well, it'll be interesting to see if he goes off script. I think it's important for the listeners to know that the State of the Union address is normally buttoned up weeks in advance, and the presidents will then rehearse it so that they get the applause lines down, the rhythm and the delivery exactly the way that they want it. If President Trump sticks with the script, he will be quote-unquote presidential, and the speech will probably receive some pretty good reviews. But he tends to be an extemporaneous speaker, and if he goes off script and brings up the Biden's impeachment, Iowa caucuses, starts in on nicknames that he has for his political opponents, who knows?
Right, who knows, indeed. Dennis, what is your best guess? Will Trump lash out at the Democratic critics seated before him in the U.S. House of Representatives this evening?
Well, I agree with Karen. I think the president is by nature an extemporaneous speaker. He's very good when he does that. When he reads a written text, it's painful. It's like watching someone read a hostage video or a script in a hostage video. That's not his forte. And so evidently given his need to lash out and attack opponents, it will be very hard for him to stay with that script. So the question will be, can he do it?
Mm-hmm. In terms of speaking off the cuff, the president does it very well, as I witnessed last week in Des Moines. Trump rally there with more than 7,000 really pumped up supporters on the campus of Drake University there, Dennis. And in asking the people waiting in line to get into this event, one of the questions I asked was, and I'll ask both of you this, does the impeachment ending in an acquittal leave Donald Trump stronger or weaker as we count down to the November general election? Karen Kudrowski, let me turn to you first of all. We pretty much know how it's going to end tomorrow. How does this leave the president?
I think it allows him an opportunity to galvanize his base, because he can frame that as a partisan witch hunt. I think those are exactly words that he has done, and that he has survived it, and that, you know, the Democrats are out to get him. And for those people who, you know, really like the president and are in his corner, I think that will help mobilize them to come out and vote for him in the general election.
Dennis, your view?
I agree with Karen in that regard, and I think that on the other side of the ledger, this may discourage some Democrats. And again, what we may or may not have seen evidence last night, but the statement that turnout for caucuses, which was anticipated to be setting a record and maybe 250,000, well above Obama in 2008, they said was on track for 2016, which would be only 171,000 roughly. That would mean that the Democrats, for some reason, if those figures hold, do not have that enthusiasm, which is absolutely necessary if they're going to have a shot at beating the president mm-hmm. in the fall.
Of course, the president, as we heard in our news report at the top of the hour, blasting Democrats for what he called incompetence. He himself for having Of course, the he was very early in the evening declared winner of the Iowa caucuses on the Republican side. He insisted Iowa would retain its first-in-the-nation nominating contest. Here's one of his tweets from last night. When will the Democrats start blaming Russia, 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 instead of their own incompetence for the voting disaster that just happened in the great state of Iowa? The president posted on Twitter, of course, a reference to Russia's efforts to interfere in the 2016 election. This president has vigorously questioned whether that interference, which our intelligence agencies say absolutely did happen. He's questioned that and continues to do that. So looking forward, I would like to have you look forward to what is next in the primary season. Of course, our caucus results will come in later today. We hope as many results as possible after today. New Hampshire, 1 week from today. Then we have on February 22nd, Nevada with their caucuses, the 29th, South Carolina, and then Super Tuesday, March 3rd, Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Minnesota, North Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, a whole slew of states. Dennis, give us an idea of what you're watching in the weeks to come and when the decisive points will be. Of course, New Hampshire will be decisive, but Super Tuesday, wow.
Well, certainly in terms of the weeks to come, the question is whether the field thins and we get a better sense of who the lead more progressive candidate is and who the lead more centrist candidate is. But according to some figures I looked at yesterday, the four February contests, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, in total, they produce about 3.9% of the delegates to the Democratic National Convention this summer. Super Tuesday alone produces about 34% of those delegates. So that's the big factor looming in the future.
Mm-hmm. And Karen Kudrowski, since you are director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics at ISU, comment a little bit about the three women we have left in the race, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, also Representative Tulsi Gabbard.
Well, one of the things that I think is very interesting about the three women who remain in the race is how they have really successfully walked a tightrope between presenting themselves in a way that women are expected to present themselves as, you know, as accommodating, agreeable, working across the aisle, taking care of, you know, as Elizabeth Warren would say, mamas and babies, focusing on issues that are traditionally feminine or that voters associate with women as being authoritative, like Tulsi Gabbard and her advocacy for peace. At the same time, they really shore up that part of their public persona by also claiming some expertise in an area that is uniquely or is usually ascribed as masculine or where male candidates are considered authoritative. Like Gabbard uses her experience in the military to justify her expertise on issues of peace and withdrawing troops. Klobuchar talks a lot about agriculture, and Warren, of course, is known for finance and bankruptcy and all those economic issues that are usually associated with male candidates.
Dennis Goldford, as we head out of this show, your comment about gender in this 2020 race. In 2016, of course, it came down to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Sure. Well, again, we've got two strong female candidates, at least in the top tier, left in the race at this point. And so much of the question, of course, is the extent to which suburban women who might have been Republican in the past might be tempted to vote for a Democrat. Whether, in fact, that person is a woman or not, we don't know yet, but that's certainly the tack that several of the candidates are taking.
Mm-hmm. In the news coverage, Karen, for you, can you see through these election cycles, and especially with the 2018 midterm election, the winning in Congress of so many women, and also the great number of women in this presidential nomination contest, is gender becoming less a factor, do you think, overall, slowly?
I think that the that gender is always a factor. It's just how is it couched? You know, commentators, candidates, and voters have unconscious biases, and that plays into their evaluations of candidates. And we might even see it in things like, I just don't like her.
Right.
It doesn't get any more specific than that.
We have to say goodbye, Karen Kodrowski, director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State University in Ames. Dennis Goldford, professor of politics at Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you, Dennis and Karen, so much for joining us. Thanks to all of our callers joining us with your caucus experiences. River to River is produced by Rick Brewer, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. Also help today from Stephanie Nobrega. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks so much for joining us.